In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, back to overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
Welcome back. Niners falls to the Vikings 23-17. That was one of two Niners turnovers that you heard there called by Kevin Harlan on the NFL on CBS. Purdy threw an interception, also lost a fumble. It was kind of looked like an interception. It was originally called an interception by the broadcast crew, then later changed. The Niners also had a punt that was blocked. They also muffed one of their own punts that they ultimately fell on, but it was an ugly day all the way around for the 49ers. 23-17 was the final. Sterling, the 49ers had a game or two like this last year. I mean, last year in Minnesota was somewhat similar. There was the turnover, the fumble by Christian McCaffrey on the first possession of that game, and then Purdy, if memory serves, threw two interceptions on the final two possessions of the game to steal that for the Vikings. I think about the Bengals game, which followed that one, which was kind of an ugly performance as well. Obviously, the Ravens on Christmas is up there in terms of ugly losses. I guess I'm saying all that to say this. The Niners had some performances like this one last year, and they went all the way to overtime in the Super Bowl. So I think one of our previous callers saying it's not the end of the world, it is 100% true. But also, the 49ers last year began the season 5-0, were feeling great about themselves, like the best team in the NFL. Now they get that gut punch a little bit earlier this season.
And that's the difference, right? You gave yourself some cushion. We're 5-0, we're feeling great. Then you have some upsetting, kind of let down losses in the middle of the year against the Bengals, the Browns, and the Vikings that you point to and say, hey, had we had won those games, the division, or more so the conference championship, wouldn't have come down to one game against the Lions and the Eagles and Dallas Cowboys. But you don't have that luxury this year. Now, you can get that luxury back by winning against the Rams and the Cardinals and the Patriots, but the Cardinals are cooking some Ram right now in Southern California. Yeah. I think it's 21-0, if not
24-3 now. 24-3.
Like,
yeah.
Yikes. But now you're 1-1, okay? You are 500 once again. Seattle doing pretty well this year so far through 2 weeks. The Rams may be 0-2 if all things end well there, but at this point, you're going to be 1-1, likely behind Seattle for the division at this point through 2 weeks, I might add. But this was an opportunity to build that cushion up once again. This was an opportunity to give you that, even if it wasn't 5 or 6 games and you're 4-2, whatever it may be, you have a little bit of space in between you and the second and third place teams. Well, that's kind of out the window now. Now, you can gain it back by winning the next 4 or 5 games, sure, but if the Rams are 0-2 and Seattle's 2-0 and the Cardinals are 1-1, that's not where you want to be. If you're the San Francisco 49ers, the expectations this year were you're going to be 12-5, you're going to be 11-6, you are going to be the head honcho of the NFC, you're fighting for that spot once again, whereas now it's like, not that I'm questioning, but I do have some questions, if you will, of what is this offense's identity without Christian McCaffrey and a let's say, less than up to speed Brandon Ayuk. I'm just not sure what it is yet outside of Jordan Mason being great for 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, and this is the part of the schedule for the Niners to get fat because you look later on, beginning October 20th, which is what? Week 1, week 2, week 3, week 4, 5, 6, week 7, you've got the Chiefs, followed by the Cowboys, then the Buccaneers. Buccaneers looking pretty good right now, by the way. They pulled off the win in Detroit, getting a little bit of revenge over their playoff loss last year in Detroit to the Lions. So you go Chiefs, Cowboys, Buccaneers, Seahawks, Packers, Bills. That is a really, really difficult six-game stretch. You go even farther, Bears, okay, we don't really know who they are yet. They looked absolutely terrible despite winning week one. They play tonight. And then you got the Rams, the Dolphins, and the Lions as well. Like, the back half of this schedule is extremely, extremely difficult, which is why this loss is a little bit frustrating and disappointing, because this is your opportunity to, as you laid out, give yourself a cushion to allow a loss or two, or hell, maybe even three in the back half of the season, and still win the division and maybe be in the running for the number one seed in the NFC. That's how difficult the back half of this schedule is for the 49ers. We'll go to the phone lines in a second. First, though, I wanted to point out a comment from the YouTube chat powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Mentality, making sure we don't forget about some of the injuries, saying don't forget about Kittle getting carted off. The one, I think, piece of good news for the Niners in this game is it seems like they're relatively injury-free from this game. Yeah. Obviously, you have the McCaffrey thing. Kittle did get carted off, but the reports are, and we'll hear from Shanahan in a second, I'm sure he addressed it, the reports are that he was just getting an IV for a cramp. He came back, returned to the game, seems fine. Bosa got rolled up on, his ankle was in a little bit of pain, walked off the field, came back in. He seems fine as well. Deebo Samuel was limping in the fourth quarter, but when is he not? That's normal, not anything new there. Of course, you'd rather him not be. He just takes a beating time and time and time again, but he stayed in the game. He seems fine. Niners seemed ultimately healthy, as healthy as you can be after a physical football game, of course, not including Christian McCaffrey, who is on IR and will miss at least three more football games. So that is the piece of good news if you are a Niner fan. No new injuries, it seems, from this game. We will hear from Shanahan on that in a second. But first, back out to the phones we go. Up next is Maurice in Rancho Cordova. Maurice, what's up? You're on Overtime with Grandy and Sterling. How you doing?
Hey, man. How y'all doing?
We're doing all right. Tough loss for the Niners, though, Maurice. What about you?
Yeah, I've never had a really good feeling about this Vikings game coming in. I don't even really know who the Vikings really are. They're kind of, they play good football. I'm interested to see what they're going to look like towards the end of the season. But I do disagree with what everybody is saying about Ayuk, that he's not getting separation, he's not getting open. If you look at the game and you look at the plays, he's not first read. He's not even second read on some of the plays. It's amazing how Kyle can force feed the ball to Deebo and find all of these creative ways to get Deebo the ball, but you cannot force feed the guy you just got paid, that just got paid $30 million a year. Brandon Ayuk used to do end arounds. He can still do bubble screens. You just don't find him a way to get him the ball. And what's weird about this, and Kyle has a quality to him to where he comes off a little bit as a rich kid. And sometimes rich kids have a certain attitude. And if you piss a rich kid off, they can make your life difficult. And it feels to me, this for just two games, it feels like he's being a little political with the wide receiver room as far as targets. Because how football works out is you have first read, second read, third read. Ayuk is running. He's running clear outs for Deebo coming across the middle. He's running clear outs for Jennings coming across the middle. He's not first read on these. So it's confusion because people are saying separation, but I don't think it's separation. I just don't think he's getting his number called right now, whether that's Kyle upset with him about what happened in the offseason or Kyle is waiting for him to get going. But we know Kyle has a tendency to put guys in the doghouse if they make him angry in any type of way. But, yeah, go back and look at film. There's plenty of plays where they actually showed the replay where Ayuk was open as well and Jennings or Debo was open, but he wasn't the first read. So they're not looking to him first and second read. They're looking at Debo and Jennings. So I don't know if that's going to change later in the season, but we'll see.
Appreciate the call, Marie. Sterling, what do you think of that? I mean, the idea that Kyle Shanahan is playing politics with his wide receiver room right now is absolutely like not even anywhere near the front of my mind. This team, at least in this game, struggling in the passing game. If you're doing that in the middle of a game where you are struggling to move the ball, this game was begging for an Ayuk deep shot, an Ayuk open deep down the right side of the field, 40-yard gain. It was begging for that, and it never happened. I would tend to believe the reason isn't necessarily Shanahan and his doghouse at this stage.
If there was a time to politic your receiver room, it wouldn't be in the midst of what's supposed to be the quote-unquote last dance for your offense. Can't move the football. Now, maybe it is, and sometimes Kyle can definitely give off that rich kid entitled vibe of, I know better than you, or like the caller said, if you make me angry, if you piss me off, I'm just not going to call your number for the next couple weeks and see how you feel. Now, I think, you know, had Christian McCaffrey been out there, you can certainly hide Brandon Ayuk a lot more, but he had two drops last week. He wasn't there outside the, what, week before, week one against the Jets. It's not as if, like, Brandon Ayuk has been out there every single practice, or even a month before week one. I think this is more as Ayuk really is not ready to be out there 100% just yet, and I would like to believe Kyle is like, I don't know if I truly trust you just yet, because I've seen Jennings and Debo out here every single day, haven't missed a practice. They're ready to go. You are steps behind. That'll likely change in the upcoming weeks once Ayuk gets his bearings, but no. And if he is, if Kyle Shanahan is politicking and somewhat doghousing or putting Ayuk in the doghouse, in week two of the 2024 NFL season, without Christian McCaffrey, and your offense isn't moving the football, my goodness, there needs to be an intervention tonight.
Yes. If that's where we are at this stage, then it is an indictment on Kyle Shanahan and this whole system. So I feel confident in saying that's not what it is right now. The blame is, if we are going to play the blame game, the blame is more on the fact that Brandon Ayuk is simply not with the team until just before the regular season began. Give it three more weeks and we can revisit it. But at this stage, I'm not believing any of that. Okay, back out to the
phone. You also don't pay a player $30 million and not target them.
Exactly.
It's the exact opposite of what you do, so it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, it makes you look bad as the coach/GM that decided to pay him all that money.
Yes.
That ran upstairs to get John Lynch off the phone with the Steelers from pulling the trigger on the trade. No. He's going to sign $30 million a year, and then, I'm going to big brain this. I'm going to galaxy brain this and not even throw him the ball. Like, if that's what's happening, that is a fireable offense. Like, legitimately.
Yes,
and that
completely.
Is, I can guarantee that is not what's happening. Okay, back out to the phones, 888-957-9570. The Niners fall to the Vikings in Minnesota. 23-17 is the final score. Up next is Daryl, who's in Alameda. I know Daryl wants to talk about Ayuk as well. What's up, Daryl? You're on overtime. How you doing?
Hey, guys. I just want to piggyback off the previous caller. I'm agreeing with him, but I'll take it even a step further. If you guys go and look at the game again, hopefully you'll be able to have a widescreen view of the field. Ayuk is open numerous times, and the ball just doesn't go his way. I remember Purdy force-fed a ball to Debo in the middle of the field. Ayuk is open on the left-hand side. He's looking around like there's nobody by me. And Purdy goes in the traffic trying to force-feed a ball. I would say I'm not blaming it on Shanahan. I would say Purdy, yeah, he put up good numbers, but he just was not making good decisions, period. He had a bad game today. And I'm not shying away from it. It's on Purdy. Receivers can't throw the ball to themselves.
Yeah, Daryl, I mean, I I think what you're talking about is fair. I will indeed have to go back and watch the tape and watch the All-22 when it comes out to see the full field and see how open Ayuk was and how often he was open. What I also will say, Sterling, is it's football. Sometimes you're wide open and the ball doesn't find you. Like, that happened last year, too, when Ayuk was an All-Pro receiver. So I don't want to overreact to, oh, he was wide open on this one, these two plays, and the ball didn't come to him. That's just what happens in the NFL. Your number one read could be on the left side of the field. Ayuk could be your two read in the middle or on the right. And because the one, even if it's a shorter route and you gain less yards, is open, you throw that ball because it's your one number one read, and you didn't even have the opportunity to check on your second or your third read. Maybe you think Ayuk should be the number one read more often, and we can have that argument, we can have that conversation, but oftentimes, Sterling, a receiver is open and he doesn't get the ball simply because it's difficult to scan the whole field at once. You don't really do it that way. It's kind of the nature of how this happens, especially when you have the number of weapons the Niners have even without Christian McCaffrey today.
There's a lot more credence to Brock Purdy simply not seeing Ayuk or simply not throwing his way than Kyle Shanahan purposefully not wanting the offense to have a game plan with him involved.
And Purdy purposefully not throwing his way. It's just the way that the offense is set up sometimes.
And history would show you that Brock Purdy wants to throw the football Brandon Ayuk's way.
Yes.
He's the most targeted receiver the past 2 years for a reason. Brock Purdy, I'm sure, would like to throw the ball to Brandon Ayuk. I'm sure there are times Purdy looks to Ayuk and he's not open, but nobody talks about those instances because they don't matter. Look, the fact is, Ayuk's getting $30 million a year now. That's going to catch everyone's eye. It's not going to matter until he catches a football 6 to 8 to 10 plus times until he is that number one receiver with a couple touchdowns in a game. We all say, where's Ayuk been this whole time? Which, okay, that's fine. That's fair. And maybe they should target him more. Maybe they should look his way more. I won't even oppose that. You're paying him more than Deebo Samuel. He should likely be a higher priority in your offense, but it's 2 weeks. Didn't have an entire offseason to work with. And if Brock Purdy didn't see him because he's a guy he hasn't worked out with the entire offseason, maybe he feels more comfortable throwing to Deebo Samuel, throwing to Juwan Jennings. I mean, I don't want to use this comparison, but Tom Brady was a quarterback that if he didn't feel comfortable throwing your way, no matter how much you were paid or your name value, he wouldn't throw your way. I don't think Brock Purdy is using that as an example or that's how he feels, but I'm sure he wants to throw to Brandon Ayuk almost every single snap because Ayuk usually is open dating back to last year and previous seasons. This year, I don't think Ayuk is wide open 90% of his snaps. You can see there are plays he's not open at all, and Purdy has to go to Deebo and Jennings and Kittle. Now, it does worry me that Kyle Juszczyk has more receptions than Brandon Ayuk so far. That's a problem. Let's get that changed, but this is not a anti-Ayuk narrative or the offense isn't like, you know what, Ayuk, you're the fourth option. Let's not throw your way at all. This is much more of a, the offense is kind of reeling and losing Christian McCaffrey. No one's playing particularly well and they're trying to find themselves still. Now, maybe Ayuk can be the answer, but that's going to have to wait till next week.
Yeah, and I think also something to point out, and this is what the YouTube chat is discussing right now, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Join the conversation at youtube.com/957thegame. Lori Matthews brings up, anytime your quarterback is sacked six times, generally that means you're not going to be able to go through all your reads. And again, we could argue maybe Ayuk should be higher up on the, I don't know, number one option, like depth chart. Like maybe he should be more off the number one option, but it's also the reality that he joined this team 2 weeks ago and they're two games in already. Like, this is not an easy thing to get that up to speed that quickly. If the offensive line was better, I'm sure Ayuk is targeted more, I'm sure Ayuk has more yards, and obviously the Niners score more points. A lot of it all comes back to the offensive line, and that's a part of this as well. Again, if you want to argue that Ayuk should be the number one read more often, that's fair, and he should be when he's fully ready to go. But I think there's also truth to the fact that he's just simply not 100% ready yet. I mean, he admitted this past week, leading up to this game, Sterling, that he was scared to watch the tape from week one because he knew how bad he played. I mean, he didn't have a drop today. I'm not saying he played really terribly today. He was okay, wasn't special, certainly nowhere near all-pro level. Now, it's also important to note, Sterling, Ayuk has games like this sometimes. He explodes, and then he kind of just is eh. And part of that is the Niners' offense. When you have McCaffrey, and you have Debo, and you have Kittle, you have so many mouths to feed. I remember it last year, week one in Pittsburgh, he had two touchdowns in the first two drives of the season. I don't think he had another touchdown until like week seven or something. Like this kind of the Brandon Ayuk experience at times. He's a hell of a football player, but he does go through these kind of stretches sometimes where it's kind of hit or miss. And right now, whether it's just the natural progression of things or it's because he reported very late for this season, he's in one of those periods where he simply misses a few times.
Go back to the offensive line. Had the offensive line played as good as they did against the Jets last week, I guarantee you Ayuk has more than four catches and five targets. The offensive line was terrible today.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal against the Jets. It was so good, it was ranked inside the top 20, and it hasn't been that good for 4 years. So, like, they were terrible today compared to last week, including Trent Williams, who wasn't terrible, but he wasn't on his A game. But had this offensive line been the same offensive line performance as last week, no one's talking about, where was Brandon Ayuk? Purdy would have had plenty of more time to find him down deep.
Yeah, no doubt. Back out to the phones we go. We're going to get to Shanahan coming up on the other side. Too many calls to get to. We love it. Keep them coming. 888-957-9570. Up next is David, who's in San Antonio. What's up, David? You're on Overtime with Grant against Sterling. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, fellas? Tough game today. You know, I'm not too concerned, you know, especially looking at what happened with the Cowboys, the Lions, what's going on with the Rams, especially with them being at home, us on the road. But I totally thought that Shanny and Sorensen specifically just got totally out-coached and out-classed today. You know, how many third and longs did we give up today? You know, they went for first downs. The 98 yards to Jefferson after the fourth and goal shutdown. Like, it was just ridiculous. I thought Purdy was mediocre at best. I thought he was holding on to the ball way too long. The sacks, I thought, you know, were more on Brock, but also wide receivers just not getting enough separation. I thought Mason was a dog today, but the difference between Mason and McCaffrey is Mason's just not a threat on third down, you know, and coming out the backfield where McCaffrey, you know, McCaffrey's special. He's offensive MVP, but Mason's just not that threat to catch a ball on third on third down where McCaffrey is. And Mason ran hard. I love the way the dude runs, but he's just not that threat. And, you know, he gets big yards, but he's just not a threat to go, you know, to be explosive. But just the not getting separation from the wide receivers was just really concerning to me. And I thought Sorensen, you know, he coached an F of a game today for me. But that's all I got, fellas. You know, thanks for the time.
Yeah, appreciate the call, David. I'm not so sure I'd go as far as an F. The defense wasn't up to their standard. I don't think it was absolutely terrible. There were some absolutely terrible moments. David is right, though, Sterling, about the third downs. Minnesota, I talked about it on that drive that sealed the game where they go up by two scores in the fourth quarter with that long drive that resulted in a field goal. They had three third down conversions on that drive that kept the drive alive. Overall in the game, 7 for 12, Minnesota was on third downs, and I don't have all of them plotted out in front of me, but I would venture a guess of those 7 conversions, at least 4 were probably like 3rd and 6 or longer. There were some back-breaking conversions for the Vikings, and that was a big reason why our caller is right. The Niners defense, in those big moments, in those big plays that turn a game, that decide a game, it was generally the Minnesota offense, Kevin O'Connell's play calling, beating out Nick Sorensen and the Niners' play calling.
Well, that's what the NFL comes down to. Good offenses continue drives on third downs. They extend drives on third downs. Good defenses get off the field on third downs. You could argue this game simply came down to getting off the field on third down for the defense. Had they stopped the Vikings on 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 7 on their last drive of the game or their second to last drive of the game, they have a chance to go down and win the game. For the Niners, their offense was not good on third down. 2 for 10. They couldn't sustain drives, and they couldn't get off the field on third down. That is the most pivotal drive in all of sports, at least in the NFL.
Yeah.
If you can't get off the field and can't continue drives, you're not going to win games no matter how good your offense or defense plays that day.
Yeah, recipe for disaster, no doubt. All right, time for a break here on Overtime. We got plenty more time for your calls, and we got to hear from Kyle Shanahan. We'll hear that coming up next. Also, Niners players, of course, have talked. I'm sure they're disappointed. We'll hear some of that as well. As Overtime continues, it's Sterling, it's Grandy with you on Overtime on 95.7 The Game. More coming up next.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Now back to Overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
Yeah, welcome back. No Kyle Madsen today. He'll be back next week. So it's Mark Grandy and Sterling Bennett with you holding down the fort here on Overtime. And who knows, maybe Kyle Madsen is the Niners' good luck charm because he was here week one. The Niners dominate and win. Gone week number two, the Niners look as bad as they have in a long time. They fall to the Vikings, final score of 23-17. That highlight you just heard, courtesy of the NFL on CBS, called by Kevin Harlan, originally called an interception. It was officially changed to a fumble. Brock Purdy, I'm not sure if he was trying to pull the ball back or his thumb slipped and the ball just squirted free. It came free before he started moving his hand forward, but popped into the air and then was caught, but officially that's a fumble because it was not a forward pass. Ultimately, doesn't really matter. It's a turnover. The Vikings get the ball back, and that was consecutive turnovers in that third quarter for the 49ers, and that was where this game really turned, Sterling, because the 49ers, after all of the issues of the first half, included a fourth and goal from the two, failed, followed by a 97-yard touchdown catch and run for Jefferson, the Niners still went into halftime, Sterling, only down by 6 points. And then you come out and you force a stop immediately to begin the third quarter. The Vikings won the toss, deferred to the second half, so they got the ball to begin the third quarter. You get a stop, you get the ball right back, and I don't know how you were feeling. I was thinking, okay, now you go down, score a touchdown, you take the lead, and this game is going to turn right there. But you come out, your first possession of the second half. You get a first down, a Mason Knight's run. Kyle Juszczyk, a toe tap along the sideline to move the chains. Then Purdy sacked. Mason backwards, negative 2 yards. Purdy sacked again. You punt. You ultimately get another stop. And then you get the ball right back, and then that's where those two turnovers happen. So the Niners' offense really let them down in that third quarter. When their defense got them two stops, Sterling, the defense got two consecutive stops to open the third quarter, but the offense could not get anything going. And to make matters worse, they twice put their defense in bad spots with turnovers, both turnovers by Purdy, by the way. And that was kind of the game. You did have an opportunity in the fourth, but hard to overcome that third quarter when you felt like maybe the momentum was shifting and then the offense stuck in the mud and turning the ball over. You just simply can't have that and win football games.
it felt like there was directly after the Warner interception, they go down, they score. Okay, that's how you steal momentum.
Yep.
Halftime, you walk in, okay, great. We're in a really good spot here. You stop the Vikings out of halftime. Okay, this is where San Francisco goes on their run to inevitably take the lead, then hopefully run away with this thing. And every time it felt like they were about to get a first down or about to get a touchdown, they got a flat tire, a drive stalled, it was a sack, it was an incompletion, it was a lot of penalties and pivotal plays in this game. Debo Samuel is killing drives. We've had a couple holding calls so far. It's just like, gosh, like, I don't know about you, but I wanted to pull my hair out. It was just like, we are better than this. Like, we are playing down to an opponent that we will likely not even see in January. That's why it's so frustrating, because it's like, we've seen this team almost win not one, but two Super Bowls. We've seen this team beat the brakes off of the Cowboys and the Eagles. We've seen this team, even pre-Christian McCaffrey, dominate the NFC West. But you can't beat the Vikings with Sam Darnold? Like, and it's no disrespect. The Vikings played a great game. They have one of the best coaching staffs in football. Brian Flores, he's an A-plus coordinator in my mind. Kevin O'Connell always has his guys ready to go, whether it's Darnold or Cousins, or last year it's Hall and Joshua Dobbs, Nick Mullins. It does not matter. Those guys are ready to go each and every game. But this is a game that, whether it was preseason, offseason, dating back to 3 days ago when we do the predictions, everyone picked San Francisco of like, yep, they have the mojo. They're going to make it a point to, without CMC, be aggressive, get out in front of this game and hold this one till the end. Get out and get the win and say, look, we're 2-0. Instead, it was, you were just stuck in the mud trying to get every yard you possibly can because the Vikings defense is smothering your offense. Your receivers can't separate. Your offensive line isn't holding up. Honestly, just the Vikings, you kicked their butt, man. You got us. You got us good and you got us early. Kudos to you.
Yeah, 23-17 was the final. The Vikings are 2-0. The Niners are 1-1. They beat the Jets and they fall here on the road to the Vikings. Okay, let's hear from Niners head coach Kyle Shanahan post-game addressing the media after this rough loss. Here is what the Niners head coach thought about everything that happened today in Minnesota.
Was there something about the way you expected this game to go that made you more willing to go for those fourth downs?
No, didn't mind the decision in those situations where we were at on the field, right, just outside of field goal range, the down and distance, and then I don't mind going for it inside the two, knowing that we'll pin them back. They made a hell of a play to get out of there, but didn't like the results, obviously.
Was the Jefferson play a coverage thing, or was it just...
No, it was just beating man coverage, and they launched the throw and got it past the middle third safety, which made it a house call.
Guys, got 20-14, they didn't have Jefferson on, so they were playing without Addison. How disappointing was it not come over to stop?
It was tough. I mean, they got us on third down. We had a couple opportunities to get off the field. Sam made a couple good throws, and they were good on third down all day. So we had our opportunities with those turnovers that they got, but he made some big plays, and it was tough after that. Yeah, I mean, the two turnovers were huge. That's what gave us a chance. I mean, both of them were just like what he did versus the Jets. He made a good job in zone, reading Sam and getting the pick, but then not giving up on that screen and knocking that ball out was the same as last week.
It seemed like an emotional, physical letdown after such a good week one. Do you treat that just to the short week?
No, there was no emotional letdown, nothing like that. I attribute it to not doing well in third down. We didn't stop their run very well. And block punt, things like that, football things. We didn't convert on third down. When you go two, I think we were 2 of 9 on third down, which usually doesn't lead to touchdowns very much unless you're doing it all in first and second. 1 of 3 on fourth down doesn't help. I think we finished, I think on that last, we were 2 of 4 in the red zone. So it was a challenge today, and we can do better.
How would you assess progress?
Some good things, some bad, kind of like the whole team, all of us.
Can you pinpoint why the offense has started slow in back-to-back weeks?
No, there's not a theme for you guys. You have to go over the three plays that we had last week and the three plays we had this week.
It seemed like your guys' pass protection was pretty good for a lot of the game, but then, you know, once you guys started getting predictable, what can you do to better protect the quarterback when you're in those passing situations time and time again?
I mean, that's why we tried really hard not to get in those situations. When you do, that's why football becomes a lot harder. You know, there's times you can chip, which we did, things like that. But they also have a lot, very good blitz scheme, caused a lot of confusion. Give them a lot of credit to it, and just got to keep working.
Did you feel pretty hopeful when they got the ball with the six-point lead?
Yeah, I did. Felt real good that, you know, the game, the day had been tough. And then once we were able to get that turnover, go down and score and make it a one possession game, felt real good. Got them in some third downs. I think we, you know, had the advantage in, but they made some big third down plays, kept the chains moving, and finished it with a field goal.
17 points in this save 2 years in a row. Brian Flores going to limit this offense.
He does a good job. I mean, they were number one in the league last year in run defense. Looks that way this year. Thought we ran the ball pretty well, but that doesn't always score you points. You know, you got to cross the end zone, and they mix it up a ton. He did a real good job, and we made some mistakes that cost us. And when it's like that and can't overcome those turnovers, the block punt, things like that, it's just credit to them.
With Christian going on IR, is that something you had to address with Jordan, or is it kind of unspoken that he's the guy, and do you have any kind of words to going?
No. Jordan's didn't have to last week either. He just does what he's been doing since he's been here. We've had two guys go down already, so I think it's pretty obvious to him that he knows he's starting when that's the case.
What's your read on how long Christian might miss her dad's before the day?
Nobody knows. You know, we're dealing with tendonitis, so there's not one person knows. He doesn't know. We don't know. We can take it day by day. If I put him on IR, it's at least 4 weeks, so that'll give him some time to rest and kind of protect him from himself, us too. And no matter how he's feeling, it's 4 at the minimum.
Is there any specialist or anything that he's going to start seeing?
He does a lot of that stuff.
Obviously, you didn't want it to happen against you, but seeing Sam out there and him being successful, what kind of things in your mind?
Didn't surprise me. We knew we were up for a challenge. Sam is a hell of a quarterback. He's got a lot of arm talent, and we also knew just scrambling wise it was going to be a different challenge today. And he got us in a couple scrambles too that, you know, he's done that his whole career. He's done it in college, and we knew we had a challenge with him.
It's Kyle Shanahan earlier today, post game in Minnesota, addressing the media after the 49ers fall to the Vikings 23-17. Certainly a couple of things that stood out to me based on what Kyle Shanahan was talking about. Of course, he was asked about the 97-yard Justin Jefferson touchdown, and he said, was that just a breakdown in coverage? Was it a bad call? What happened there? Is simply a great player making a great play? And he said, well, that's just Justin Jefferson beating man coverage. I don't know what you felt when you heard him answer that question. My follow-up would have been, do you like George Odom matched up on Justin Jefferson? Because that's a matchup thing that I want to avoid at all cost every single play in this game.
Well, it's not like George Odom is, one, your best safety in the room. It's Jair Brown. Two, he's never the player you want to have on any opposing team's top receiver. Mooney Ward, Lenore. Honestly, at this point, I think I'd rather have Renardo Green and you just say, it's a rookie, got beat, whatever. But George Odom, who I like George Odom, he's a phenomenal special teams player. I will say this, and I mean it all due respect. There's a reason he is primarily a special teams player. He's a fine vet to have. He wasn't noticeable against the Jets. And look, it's not like Justin Jefferson, outside of the one catch, was having a phenomenal game. He caught the ball four times for 133 yards and one touchdown. That one play was essentially Justin Jefferson's output in this game.
Yep.
But yeah, Kyle, maybe don't put your backup strong safety on the best wide receiver in football.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson, 4 for 133 and a touchdown. Important to note, he did go out in the second half and did not return. Yep. I think that Kevin O'Connell was calling it a quad issue for JJ, and he's officially day-to-day at this point. You'll probably know more tomorrow, the next day. If you have him on fantasy, fingers crossed for you. You never want to see one of those stars go out for an extended period of time, and he missed a lot of time last year. So hope that he's okay. But you're right. Without that 97-yard touchdown catch, that's, what, three catches for 36 yards? Over the rest of the game, over every other play but one, that's a pretty good job defensively. But when you have a star player like that, and sometimes the game of football can come down to one play, when you have a star player like that, it all it takes is one sometimes. And Justin Jefferson made the most of it. It's just unfortunate for the Niners that the one time maybe they fell asleep a little bit, it was when they were 97 yards to be gained, and Justin Jefferson, you give him that opportunity, he's going to take every single one of those 97 yards.
Land, that play in particular, and it's not as if the deep ball has not hurt San Francisco safeties in the past, whether it was Jimmy Ward and Jaquiski Tartt, and mainly when it was Gibson and Hufanga. When you have players like Jair Brown and Hufanga, they want to play towards the line more. They want to be these stumping, playmaking, in-the-box safeties, and they're usually slower players that are susceptible to the deep ball. It's happened the last couple of years, and so seeing that isn't a surprise. Seeing San Francisco get beat deep isn't a surprise, but it's when the opposing offense is on their own 1 or 2 yard line, yeah, where you can put 7 to 8 guys in the box and play man coverage and say, hey, we're going to bank on our guys getting some pressure. First off, nobody got pressure. Second off, Sam Darnold is in a clean pocket with room to step up and make that play. Nobody did their job on that play. Not just George Odom. We're talking Bosa, Hargrave, Collins, whoever else was in there. They're on the 2 yard line. Get a hand up. Put a hand on somebody. In the Vikings offense of line, for as bad as they were against the Giants, ranking 29th coming into this game, played a really, really good game and gave Sam Darnold plenty of time to throw almost all day long.
Yeah, they did. A quick note before we get back to other things that Kyle Shanahan said. We do have a development from Arizona where the Rams are currently getting absolutely boat raced by the Cardinals. It's 31-3 early in the third quarter now, by the way. And another injury for the Rams. Cooper Kupp is doubtful to return. They already lost Puka Nacua last week, Sunday Night Football, and he's been placed on IR. Cooper Kupp, his return is doubtful. We'll try to find a little bit more news on exactly what it is. Looks like it's an ankle injury for Cooper Kupp. So
that's not good.
That's not good. It's not good for, I mean, that Rams team is already dealing with an insane amount of injuries. They lost two offensive linemen week one. They lost Puka Nacua week one. Now maybe they've lost Cooper Kupp week one. I will break the news. Cooper Kupp will not return today. They're down by 28 points. just don't play him the rest of the game. Chalk this up as an L. Right. Start 0-2 and hope that he's okay and maybe ready to go for the Niners week three. Niners will not necessarily terribly miss Cooper Kupp if he does not play next week. But that is something to keep an eye on for the 49ers, of course, because Cooper Kupp's availability and the Rams in the division, certainly that affects how this Niners season could play out, Sterling.
Yeah, I mean, that's, to take it even further than that, while the Rams may be kind of in this, you know, this limbo situation, let's say Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua don't play next week. San Francisco, you have no excuse not to beat the brakes off of the Rams. Talk about needing a get-right game, if you will, for this Niners team after today's loss. If you're playing the Rams that have three offensive linemen out, no Puka Nacua, and no Cooper Kupp, you better win next week
yes,
in Levi South, and hopefully you can get right, and people can get off the, you know, the world is crumbling. San Francisco is 1-1 or 2-1 at this point. Hopefully they can get back to who they were after the Jets win in week number one, if Cooper Kupp is not going to play in week three against San Francisco.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so back to what Kyle Shanahan was talking about. We already broke down what he said about the 97-yard touchdown by Justin Jefferson. Also talking about what's kind of hurting the 49ers on offense, he talked about third downs, fourth downs, and red zone. Sterling, those are three very, very big things, specifically third down and red zone. And you look at what the Niners have done so far this season, it has not been great. And today was much, much worse than week one, of course, when they scored 32 points against the New York Jets. And they won 32-19. Today they lose 23-17. But the Niners today, Sterling, on third downs, 2-for-10. Compare that to what Minnesota did, 7-for-12. On fourth down, they were 1-for-3. The 49ers were. Minnesota did not need to go for a fourth down. And then in the red zone, the 49ers 2-for-4. This is where the Niners defense actually stood tall. They were 1-for-3. The Vikings were on their red zone appearances. But now for the 49ers, Sterling, through 2 weeks, in the red zone, the Niners are 4-for-9. That means 9 red zone appearances. 9 times you've had the ball inside the opponent's 20-yard line. You've only scored a touchdown 4 of those 9 times. And that is like opposite of what last year was. The Niners were the best red zone offense a season ago. A big part of that, probably Christian McCaffrey. Maybe a big part of that as well is Brandon Ayuk. And the Niners up to this point, Sterling, for whatever reason, have really, really struggled. And it's why I think you, I, and Kyle Madsen last week all struck the right tone because the 49ers struggled in the red zone. And while they did score 32 points, Sterling, you had plenty of room to grow. And why I think we were kind of pointing to that as a reason, maybe be a little bit worried. And today was more of the same. The 49ers just 4-for-9 in the red zone so far this season, 2-for-4 tonight.
And the offense has struggled in the first quarter. Last year, San Francisco, I think, hadn't scored on a first drive all but maybe one or two games last year. They were stellar, excellent, number one, number two team in football at getting ahead of opponents early and continuing to score throughout the game, almost never letting up and always having a lead. This year, they've never had a first quarter lead. This year, they, I believe, are shut out in the first quarter in totality. And if they have scored a first quarter point, it's 3 points.
It was a field goal week one. Yeah, correct.
Okay, so they have three.
Off the Fred Warner forced fumble on Breece Hall week one. Yeah, that was it.
Fred Warner making plays. Who would have thought the offense not being able to pick things up? Shocker. That's who they've been through 2 weeks of the season so far. And, you know, this is not who they were last year. And I'm not overly concerned of San Francisco not finding themselves, again, if you want to call it that, or the offense, you know, having issues throughout the year. Christian McCaffrey being absent shouldn't decimate your offensive production, but I do think there is something to say of the offense with Christian McCaffrey, obviously more dangerous. Someone has to step up if he's not going to be out there for, let's say, the next 6 weeks, or if it's that bad, post bye week, pre-Buccaneers game, I think in week number 9 or 10. So it's not as if San Francisco doesn't have the weaponry. Like, Kyle Shanahan is supposed to be a genius. And what rubbed me the wrong way in this game in particular was the fact that last week, Shanahan's calling the purr dog play. They're trying to run trick plays left and right. When your offense is actually moving the football, where in this game, your offense is stuck in the mud, can't do anything, and Shanahan's like, hey, jam it up the middle for the next 5 plays. Let's hope we can get something to work here. And I get each game's different, but it's like, if there is a game to dive into that bag of tricks really deep and pull something out of your you-know-what, this is that time to say, hey, we got to get 7 points here. Let's do some trickery, or let's pull something out of the hat and see if it works. There was none of that today.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it was out there and you just couldn't see it on the broadcast. That's fine. But it felt like San Francisco, again, including Kyle Shanahan, it was like, here's the game plan. It's not working. And we don't really know what to do to fix it. And that's horrifying because they're not going to have CMC for 6 more weeks.
You think it's going to be that long?
I think so. I think San Francisco underestimated the injury initially. And I do think Christian McCaffrey's Achilles tendonitis, that is scary. That thing can pop and linger for a long time. Fingers crossed it doesn't get worse, but I think people are not understanding how serious this can be. He can come back in week 10, whenever it is, and be out week 11. This thing could be a massive issue the entirety of the season.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm not so sure exactly how long it's going to last, but it's also an injury where, and you, I'm not so sure how much you can be thinking about future seasons, Sterling, but it's also an injury where, say, God forbid, he pops his Achilles, like, when he comes back week 6. That puts next year in jeopardy. Like, this isn't just a one-year thing either. So you don't want to sacrifice this season for the sake of keeping him healthy, hopefully, for next season. Like, this is a really important season. But if you do rush it, you might not just be costing yourself this season. You might be costing yourself next season. He'll play when he's ready. You don't know exactly when it is. I have a bigger problem, Sterling, with why he was even out there practicing on Thursday before this game anyway. I mean, he tried to give it a go on Thursday, and according to Kyle Shanahan, he said Thursday was, quote, his worst day in terms of pain that this entire experience has been for him. Why is he even out there trying to get ready for this game? Take a week off. We're hearing from so many people, Matt Barrows of The Athletic talking about it, other people talking about it. Christian McCaffrey's rest isn't really like rest. Like, he's still on it and he's still working out and he's still trying to get right. Christian, get off your feet, bro. Like, I know it's difficult for you. You're a busybody. You got to stay moving, but it's Achilles tendonitis. You got to give it the rest it needs. And, you know, maybe I don't know exactly what I'm talking about and how this injury is impacting him. And maybe he did really feel good enough to go on Thursday. And then it was just unfortunate that he tweaked something and it got worse. I would be much more willing, Sterling, to sacrifice a week or two than now get into a position where we're looking at a 5, 6, 7, 8 game absence for Christian McCaffrey and hope that it's all right back then. I didn't even want him touching the practice field at all this past week, and that's what made it worse, apparently.
Well, then go back to, apparently he had the injury in the playoffs last year. Okay, he gets injured, he plays through it, great, you gutted it out, you didn't win it all, but fine, you gave everything you had. Then he has the entire offseason to rest. You're off your feet. You got married. You had a good time. You're probably in that California king bed more than you want to say publicly, but by all means, good for you, brother. It's like, you're not doing much. Then you have a couple weeks of practice, and all of a sudden it flares back up. You can't do much, and he's out there pushing and pushing and pushing it, and it's like, Christian, just stop. I get it. You want to be out there with the boys in the huddle, but for the sake of your season, the team season, and this team's opportunity to win a Super Bowl, just take a sabbatical, have a rest. If you have to go to Hawaii, kick back, my friend. Do whatever you got to do. Just get off of your feet to preserve your own health. No one's asking you to dog this thing out and gut this thing out in week two of the NFL season. A loss today, it sucks, but I'll take a loss today if it means Christian McCaffrey's healthy for weeks 8 through the Super Bowl and it's a win. That's all I hope what happens.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. He is way, way, way too valuable to be risking anything with him. Even if you think it's probably going to be okay, it's going to be safe. Don't risk it. He's too important and too good of a football player to risk that kind of thing. All right, time for a break here on Overtime. When we come back, we'll get back out to the phone lines. Jerry and Edgar, I see you on hold. Stay there. We're coming to you first thing when we come back. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 888-957-9570. That's also the Xfinity mobile text line. It is Overtime here on 95.7 The Game. The Vikings upset the Niners in Minnesota. The Niners haven't won in Minnesota since 1992. What the hell is going on? It is 23-17 Vikings over the Niners today. More OT with Grandy and Sterling next on 95.7 The Game.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.